when we read the Mishnah at the beginning of the parak, and it's worth, since it's been about a month at least, or more than a month, it's worth reiterating an observation that we made then. According to the Mishnah, the simple reading of the Mishnah, what bracha do you make on orange juice?
Right.
The answer is Bari Peretz, right? I didn't get an answer that definitive for when I asked in the first day of Shia. Right. Now I got a definitive answer. You make Bari Peretz. Okay. Now, does that surprise you?
No.
You weren't here, so I want to know. Okay, but why? When you read the Mishnah, Michael, you're looking puzzled there. What does the Mishnah say about orange juice? I'm sorry? The opening Mishnah of our parak. Correct. And now, and therefore, what does it tell you about orange juice? Right, because after all, what's the difference between grape juice and orange juice, right? They're both squeezed. And on grape juice, the exception to the rule, it doesn't say, or something like that. It picks fruit juice and says that if not for the special designation of Bari Pri HaGefen, Bari Pri HaGefen, so you would have said Bari Pri Eitz. So the assumption of the Mishnah is that all fruit, the simple reading of the Mishnah is that all fruit juices, the bracha is ha'etz. Now, what about, there's another point that we made less of in the Mishnah, but is equally applicable. You know, one of the shailas that comes up is, what bracha do you make on cornflakes? Right? The question is, does it look like corn anymore? It's an ishtana, right? It's the corn has been taken, it has been dried out, it has been ground up, and now it does not look anything like corn. The question is, what bracha do you make on it? The obvious choice is being ha'adam or shahako. So, what does the Mishnah have to say about cornflakes? Yosef? Make ha'adama, because if you think about it, bread is considered pre-ha'adama, and you would have made, if you didn't have a special bracha of hamotzi lechem in ha'aretz, then what bracha would you have made on bread? Bari pre-ha'adama. So presumably everything, and it's nishtana, you know, bread certainly does not look anything like wheat. For those of you who've seen what wheat looks like, or wheat kernels look like, bread and wheat don't look alike at all. It's fairly good. You can even imagine what wheat looks like if you've never seen it in the flesh. They don't look anything alike. So the Mishnah seems to be oblivious to the possibility that changing a food, transforming a food, would have any impact upon its bracha, with the exception of two cases, yayin and lechem. Those would be the only two exceptions. Now, that would be very simple. And whose position in effect is that? That position is the position of, with respect, what's that? It would seem to be at least the opening position of the Yerushalmi. What's that?
And Rabbi Yossi.
Rabbi Yaakov, the opening Amora, right? Because his basically that seems to be where the Gemara winds up. Now, obviously, the picture's a little more complicated because the Yerushalmi continues and has some dissenting opinions in some cases. Now, before we go back and read, look at the Tosefta briefly and then on to the Yerushalmi. And this may be drawn already based upon what you find and what you know from the past. What would you say the governing factor should be in terms of whether changing something or not creates a new bracha or changes the status of the bracha? Let's not create a new bracha. That's creating a new bracha is limited to yayin and to pas. But what factors, what logical factors would you think should determine whether or not you're going to make the same bracha you made before or not? Yosef? So one thing might be if it looks like it. You might look if it, you know. In other words, something, is it really a shinui? Two, Chaim.
It's creation. I mean, is it something that you made, or is it something that's just like whatever, just a change from, but still essentially what God made?
I'm not sure how that's different than what Yosef is saying.
I mean, like saying it's process.
Okay, so Yair says a taste, Yehuda. Taste. what else might be, David, and then Gabe.
If it's a recognize, not just visually, but if it's thought of as being connected to
Okay, one way of saying that might be what people call it. As you might argue, I don't know if it is. I'm flying a little bit blind than this. I know the sugya in the Bavli, basically, but I don't know how all this comes out. L'psak halacha. You might say that there's a difference between. You might argue that Cheerios, assuming for the moment you made.
That's a good example. Okay.
Now, well, Cheerios, there are called often toasted oats. I mean, you know, all the. But cornflakes, you know, or Rice Krispies versus. Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Oh, maybe toast also counts. I don't know. In other words, something that doesn't have a shame of the. What's that?
Fruity Pebbles.
It's okay. That's all sugar doesn't have anything.
Shai,
anyway.
The question is whether or not it's in the category of Azuke Mazikle. That's a different issue. Okay. So.
May just be meatball,
you're saying? So, anyway. Or you might at least glow in the dark after you eat them. But all right. So a possibility might be shame, the name. And that I'm not sure. I don't want to say that that's not operative. Well, I don't remember the Bavli ever actually using that, but maybe I haven't seen this in a while. Okay. What else? It's one other factor nobody has suggested, but Eitan?
Status changes. For instance, wine has a higher status.
Okay. So in other words, the notion, and this comes up pretty quickly in the Bavli, whether or not you know it's an Iluya, whether or not it's considered an improved form, mm-hmm. That might be a factor. The one more piece that sort of goes along with that. I think they're not probably thinking in the terms of health. I mean, I think that Chazal thought that specific foods had specific effects. I don't think they thought, and remember, there were things that they thought that we would consider patently unhealthy, even the standard part of our diet, like refined flour. Clearly, refined white bread was considered the highest form of bread. Now, personally, I find it tasteless, and it's certainly very unhealthy. I mean, now there's been a shift away from this. You know, but there was a long time until the 50s or 60s where the more processed everything was, the better it was. You know, that's why we also didn't have mothers nursing their children, which in some cases it doesn't work, but clearly from a medical perspective, this, you know, not a shayla, not a whit of a shayla, what's better for a child. So the world has started to move back, but I don't think Chazal thought in those terms.
In the case of the fish, right before it started smelling, they would eat it and they would think it would...
That's the ptosis at the end of the second parakamoid, first parakamoid katan.
Yeah, he's saying it's in terms of health.
No, I said that there were things that they knew, there were certain foods they knew that were unhealthy or that they thought was, they actually thought that was the best time to eat it. Sushi, right before it starts really smelling, right? But that's the case you're talking about. That's when it's best. I think from their perspective, you know, if it didn't, they didn't see, the kinds of questions you're talking about when it's healthy tend to be long-term questions. And they thought only in the short term because I don't think they recognized long-term effects. They may have been less affected by long-term effects because they lived a far less sedentary lifestyle. So, you know, it's not that you could live on a diet of devil dogs, but if you run 5 miles a day and you live on a diet of devil dogs, you're probably far better off than if you don't run 5 miles a day and live on a diet of devil dogs. So hear that, all you yeshiva bachurim. They still make devil dogs, don't they?
Yeah.
They still sell them in the calf store, right? Okay, so I want to make sure on that.
Drake's cakes,
yes. And always Yashan to boot. And I think all the drinks are, yes.
By the time you get them.
Okay, so you're spiritually healthy and physically unhealthy. Okay. Anyway, what's that, Shlomo?
It's scary that they're always
doesn't mean they're always stale. Okay.
Right.
Anyway, so one other piece that wasn't suggested yet, though, and we've had notions of whether it looks like the original food, whether people call it by its original shame, they had Iluya. There's one more thing which sort of goes in the Iluya category game.
Wait, didn't someone mention
the
taste?
Taste. Okay, throw taste in there. What's that?
How do you know what it tastes like before you make the broth?
One person presumably figured it out.
Yes. Okay. The other piece is whether or not it's its normal form of being eaten that way. Now, that may be tied to Iluya, but it's not exactly the same thing. In other words, grapes and wine, the wine might be considered Iluya, but grapes are a normal form of eating it. Okay. So again, something is Darko Bekach could be a factor as well. Now, when you read the Yerushalmi, I warn you once again, as those of you who are reading the Yerushalmi, you read the Yerushalmi, with a tabula rasa. You got to read it with a blank slate, because there are things here. There's one piece at the end of the sugya which I find to be completely counterintuitive, and the reason I find it to be completely counterintuitive is because I'm pretty sure that's not the way we usually see things, and it's not the way we usually see things because that's not the way either the Bavli or the Poskim typically see things. So that's just something. And by the way, if I were in Mefarish the Yerushalmi living in the 18th century, you know what I would do? I would change the girsa. That's what I would do. And that's what they used to do, because if it didn't, you know, not always, but if, you know, if it didn't fit, so that's what you do, because it's got to make sense. Jeremy.
In the time of Chazal, grapes were often eaten, correct? It wasn't just...
Yes. I suspect that most grapes were used for wine, but people did eat grapes. It's an issue that's relevant and discussed in the Mishnayos and Trumos, in terms of when you're not allowed to take the grapes. If they're used for wine, you have to make it all wine, and then you give a kohen truma from the wine. You're not allowed to give him truma from the grapes, and then you make the rest into wine. So you get a sense from the Mishnayos there. I get a sense, at least, and I'm sure that there probably are different vintages of grapes. You know, that what's that? All right, some are more.
Right.
Why
on average, grapes are used for wine.
On an average day, you would someone eat a few bunches of grapes and a couple of glasses of wine? Meaning, because grapes are also the pre-Hagat.
Yes, as is apparent from the sugya about Boi pre-Eitz Zayas. I suspect most grapes, I don't know this for sure, most was used for wine. Remember, wine was their standard beverage. Water was generally not safe to drink.
Was it did not have a high alcoholic content?
Firstly, I can't tell you, that's a question I've always been bothered by, but I can tell you the following. Water was unsafe to drink. They used to dilute their wine with water. Now, reason why apparently that was not unsafe to drink is because the alcohol content was sufficient to protect against whatever the issues were in the water. Now, if you take your wine, if you take a 6-ounce cup of wine, again, I have no reason to believe that their wine was fundamentally any stronger than our wine. I could be wrong.
They could have ferment a lot longer.
It's possible.
What's
that? Thank you. That was said well. And useful. So the fact is 12% is what, 11-12% are your typical typical wines. So I think that answers that question. So if you figure, if you take a bottle of wine and you drink it, I mean, if you look at the Gemara in Ksubas where they talk about, the Birchas Avelim, so, you know, the Pasuk in Mishlei says, Tnu Shechar Lo Oved V'Yayin L'mari Nefesh, right? Wine is for the miserable people, right? It leads to misery, but also you want to make miserable people feel, you want to numb their senses, so you give them wine. That's what the Gemara Sanhedrin says. Before they would execute a person, they would be given a Koret Shel Chiltis or something like that, just some type of alcoholic or something. That's before they were going to kill him. And it's true. So anyway, it's also said in the context of Avelos. So they talk about, they had at one point, there were 10 kosas of wine they would drink, and then they added on 4. And then they said it was just too much, the people couldn't handle it, so they moved it back to 10. I'm thinking, 10, you imagine someone drinking 10 cups of wine? I mean, let's assume a cup was 3 ounces of wine, okay? You're talking about a bottle and a third of wine. Now, I'm not a wine drinker, personally, but on an empty stomach, I think 1 cup of wine is enough to make some of us a little bit lightheaded. A bottle of wine, I suspect, I don't know, because I never, those of you who know my perm practice, I don't drink. So I'd imagine a bottle of wine, you know, within an hour is enough to make most people drunk. You know, a full bottle of wine.
Are they eating along with it or no?
Not if they're French.
Shouldn't
they eat
within an hour?
It's a whole lot of alcohol. It may slow it a little bit, but, you know, when you're talking about 30 ounces of wine, now, if you say it's diluted 4-to-1, so then 7 or 8 ounces of wine, that's, you know, not an, you know, crazy amount. So it would seem to me that, so wine was their standard beverage. It was what was safe to drink. I think grapes were a minority usage. I think in antiquity. Clean water is a very recent Western, you know, luxury to some extent. I'm not saying nobody ever had clean water. There was spring water. But in terms of widespread availability of water, people live near waterways. They polluted them with all sorts of things. And therefore, most of the water sources were tainted.
How long, till how late did this continue? Because you definitely didn't
You know, I mean, I know at the time of the Gemara, the whole issur of wine and meat was only on Erev Tisha B'Avatzma. But later, when you're in the Minhag to refrain from Rosh Chodeshah, do they drink beer or what? I mean,
don't know.
I mean, they're talking about
what's
not
that?
Drinking wine.
I understand. No, no, no. So,
just like
Michael,
just like every year now, once they Shabbos Chazon, everybody rushes out to get beer for
No, I said there was such a, not that there was no clean water, but it wasn't readily, you know, it wasn't the reason why wine was the standard beverage of choice, and then above all, it may have been beer, was because water wasn't generally safe to drink. It's not that there were no sources. But, what's that?
It also tastes better than water. I mean, for a meal, you know, it's not that they had, you know, they could go to the store and find orange juice and apple juice and whatever.
Okay.
It's,
anyway, so, bottom line is I think most of their grape production was for wine. So those are the various possibilities that you want to keep in mind as factors. If we see anything more, you add it to the list. So let's take a look at what the Yerushalmi says. I've skipped over a portion of the Yerushalmi that we will come back to. Let's take a minute just to look at the Tosefta. Just for 1 second. I sent out the Tosefta on the Makara sheet. So the Tosefta writes, I have a volunteer reader. Vermouth, please.
Speaking about that.
Probably Sitvanias. What is Morias? Right. So this is great. You're reading it to Sefta. So you don't. You say that on Wusha 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 Wush. You make the same brachas you make on. Right. That's great. So you don't know what either of them are. Right. So that's really helpful. So dvash, some of them. Dvash tvarim we know. Dvash generally in biblical Hebrew, dvash is assumed to refer to date honey, unless it's explicitly referring to bee honey. One exception to this rule in halacha to be aware of is that the shiva mashkim that are machshir foods to be mekabel tuma, the dvash there is dvash dvarim, not dvash tvarim. It's significant actually in the scope of our sugya, because you see that dvash tvarim is not being treated as a mashke. Dvash tvarim is treated as a mashka because it never has any existence really as a solid. I mean, it's protected by the honeycombs, but it's basically liquid from its inception, at least the way we perceive it, whereas dvash tvarim is not treated as a mashka.
Because it started as solid.
Because it's...
Glass is a liquid. Very, very
it's not quite as super cool, doesn't it? The date honey flows. I mean,
it does flow, but it'll take all
you know,
day.
Wine is like water. Oil is a little more viscous. Date honey is a little bit slower than that. But you would,
I date honey is slower than
oil, olive oil.
Olive is not so viscous.
Even wine and water, they had 2 different pipes.
What's that?
What?
2 different pipes for the wine.
Yeah, but
wine.
What does that have to do with anything?
How viscous they are.
What? Oh, you're correct. No, well, that may have been because of dregs.
Huh?
No, probably not, because they wouldn't have had dregs on the wine they were pouring. What Ben was talking about is made a reference to the Mishnah in Sukkah about Nisach HaMayim and Nisach HaYayin. Is it Sukkah's Vacham? I don't remember.
Oh, right. They're different.
And they were different widths because they wanted them to end the pouring at the same time. That's an interesting question. The wine, I'm sure, was thicker. Obviously, but it's still. I suspect that when you spill wine, you won't notice the difference between that and water flow. Oil certainly takes a little more time to flow. Probably Yayin Chai. I have to imagine. I could be wrong.
Probably.
When it got to the end, it was Mazug.
Well, yeah.
Anyway, I don't know. I don't know. But anyway, so Dvash Tamarim is not treated in the other context as a liquid. Okay, the fact that the Torah praises Eretz Yisrael with Vash, that happens to be the Vash tomorrow. In fact, one of the phenomenal ironies in this entire discussion, particularly, I say the entire discussion, the discussion of fruit juices, which is one piece of the Ocha Shemeshtana discussion, is how does the Torah describe the fruits in the Shivas Aminim? Is it wine or grapes?
Wine.
It's a gefen, you could argue, is ambiguous. How does it describe olives? I mean, I think it means grapes. What is a shemen?
Oil of olives.
No. It's oil olives. That's correct. It's olives that's described there. And how is honey described? Is dates or honey?
Dvash.
The great irony is that olive oil is treated... The great irony is that oil olives are, in effect, treated as olive oil, and honey is treated as dates. Right?
How does that... What do you mean by that flip?
The Torah, when it describes the Shiva Saminian, describes dates as a liquid.
Right.
And olive oil is a solid, and yet the halacha treats olive oil as the real form of zeisim, and it treats dates as the real form of honey.
What do you mean the real form?
In other words, for the purposes of Bikurim, as an example, which is learned directly, you know, what's the eretz.
Wonderful.
So for the purposes of that gezeir shava. So that you learn Bikurim. So what is the assumption? What should you be able to bring as Bikurim in the liquid form? You'd assume you should be able to bring honey, and you shouldn't be able to bring olive oil. It's lehafa. You're not allowed to bring honey as the Bikurim. You're allowed to bring olive oil as the Bikurim.
Are you allowed to bring olives or
oil? I don't remember.
You may not be allowed to, you're saying?
I don't remember if your stafka is supposed to bring it that way, but certainly you can bring olive oil. So it's complete now. The fact that it's so counterintuitive suggests what? You don't have to suggest that. Leave it aside for the moment. You don't have to suggest anything right now. Dvash tamarim, yein tapuchim. What is yein tapuchim?
Apple cider.
V'chomet sitvanios.
Wine vinegar.
What's that?
Wine vinegar.
So it's... Yeah, Michael? Yes, that's what it would appear. The fact that it's chometz sitvanios is that it's not actually vinegar yet. It's probably sour, like vinegar. Chometz, you're right, doesn't normally mean vinegar, but sitvanios here mean the grapes that grow at the end of the at the end of the season. They're in vase stov.
Some grapes, their juice is immediately vinegar because it's not immediately. I mean, it's grape juice instead of turning into wine will turn into vinegar in a few days if there's more acetic acid.
Okay. But it might be wine, but it's obviously
end
not.
Of the season wine.
It's not good wine. Let's put it that way. So, what is the Tosefta tell us? Mevarech alein kederesh mevarchen al hamuryas. What is muryas?
Fish brine.
Fish sauce.
What bracha do you make on that?
Shahakal.
That's pretty. It would seem to be. It should be shahakal.
Since you're making
on
a
what?
Bracha.
That's something we're going to have to talk about. It's obviously edible because you're drinking it. The question is at what point is but ladatul eitz kaladim? It's a decision we're going to talk about. It's someone who swallows the shemen whole, you know, straight. I've never tried it. I would not advise it. As someone who regularly partakes in with bread dipped in olive oil, and occasionally you get a little too much olive oil, I would highly advise against drinking, you know, olive oil. It makes sense. You know, the doctors might say it's not the worst idea in the world. One of my friends who's a doctor describes it as, you know, the WD-40 of the arteries. But I think it's best taken in, you know, smaller quantities, you know, with other things, you know, because otherwise it might kill you otherwise. And you might not die of a heart attack, but, you know, maybe it'll burn a hole in your stomach or something like that. So, okay. Yes.
By comparing it to Murias,
yeah.
I mean, what is the Hava Amina of this Tosefta?
What is the Hava Amina? Answer Chaim's. Somebody answer Chaim's question.
At all, or is
no.
They, no.
Answer Chaim's question.
They would make whatever they.
The fruit form or two.
Yeah, you would have thought Bari Priya Eitz. I think that's pretty clear.
So what's the comparison? I mean, Murias.
It's a clear shahakal,
but so is the fish. So
No. The Mishnah, you know, you could ask me a question. Why did the Tosefta not say Mevar Halem Shahakal? I don't know. Is there something more implied in the comparison?
So these are all things that their parent product have one bracha and they have another one.
Say it differently. These are all things that are completely different than their parent product. Not in terms of bracha, in terms of their mitzius.
Okay.
Nadav? You know, but then what you've done is you've gone from here to here. Right? You would have expected a special bracha. Instead, you say they don't even get the eighth bracha. Right. Is there a question from David?
I mean, just to respond to what Chaim said, I think that the point here is this is teaching us how far you go to change something from integrated Kriya 8. And the reason it brings more yes is because that one, there's no question of what the bracha would be.
Right, but the question is, why not just say Shahakal?
I think what it's tacitly trying to tell us is that the reason you make Shahakal Amurias is not because it's because it comes from a fish, it's sort of a new creation or something.
Right.
And in the same way, all these things fall into the category that way.
Okay.
But
let me go back. Who said earlier? Who tried modifying what Yosef had said about whether or not it's God's creation or man's creation? So Chaim, in effect, that really is what you said before, which is, in other words, what is Shakal Nia Bidvaro? And conceptually, what underlies the whole shift from Boy Prates to Shakal Nia Bidvaro?
It's no longer recognizable.
What's that?
It's no longer recognizable as eight.
No, more than that. It's no longer God's. God's described this. I mean, I don't know if this is going to work thoroughly because, you know, Bori Pri Eitz and Bori Pri Ha'adama, working only from this narrow issue, because it's also Bori Pri Agafen, which is also ambiguous, because Pri Agafen could be the grapes.
Right.
But there might be this notion that it's no longer God's handiwork, and that's why you say Shakol Nia Bidvaro, or Nia Bidvaro.
I really doubt that this is the interpretation, but you could even make an argument to say that that when it says Kederach Shemavarchin Al Murias, which just like the fish is a shakal, so too the Murias is a shakal. It could be arguing that the Yain Tapuchin, just like it's come the Tapuach is aides, so too the Yain Tapuchin aides. I mean,
why is it clearly not what it is? I wouldn't automatically dismiss that. That's not a crazy reading. But again, I would have just, in other words, you still left with the question, why not say Mavarech Bari Priya 8? Another possibility that could have been is that you would have, but it's hard to imagine all the cases. In the case of Chometz Sidvanios, you might have thought you don't make a brach at all. Like Rabbi Yehuda Shita, that you don't make a brach on Chometz, he says you don't make a brach at all, right? Because it's really not considered machal, just like Morias. The problem is you're not going to say that about Vash. I mean, your dentist might not want you to, or maybe Dafka might want you to, have honey hole. But certainly, I don't think anybody would say that you can't, that honey hole is not it's not edible. It's quite delicious, in fact. Michael?
Just as far as the
should work also. Yeah, only Chometz Sidvanios would be like Morias.
As far as the Shahako being that it's no longer God's handiwork, I'm one of the major things you make Shahako on is also.
What's that? Let's put it this way. Michael, this goes back to the question of Shinui, generally. When you take an apple off, you look at it as God's handiwork. It looks like an apple. When you have a piece of meat on your plate that you bought at Glad Express, it doesn't look like a cow. If it did, you wouldn't eat it. What's that? Thank you, Gabe, but that doesn't do us any good. Michael, Shahakal is a catch-all bracha. There are a lot of things that may fall in there, even if they were God's handiwork for other reasons. No, what I'm saying is that you may fall out of Borei Priates because it's no longer in that. That's my point. Shahakal may have multiple functions. Okay, anyway.
Do you think that at some point Shakal was never like a chila bracha, or was only the Bidiyat? Because we find in the Mishnah, we find these various brachas for various things. I don't remember where.
No, but Shakal is in the Mishnah.
Al kulan im beirach alayan Shakal mi'am yidro yatza.
But the Mishnah has lachatchilas shahakals. The Mishnah has. Yeah, the Mishnah has beferish that. The Mishnah, halacha base, at least in the Yerushalmi, has what you said. But then al davar shein gdul min haaretz omer shakol nebed varo.
Okay.
Now the time, and then a chometz val gavan levalos omer shakol nebed varo. Yehuda omer kol shem min kolayim mevarachan alav. So I think it's clear And Mizonos is the only bracha that's missing from the Mishnah. Right?
So but does any of the Tanaim not have a shako at least as l'chalchila?
None that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Okay.
So they would say l'chalchila over eggs, over meat, over fish.
Yeah.
Only yeah. Rebbe would.
You mean Borei and Borei Minafashas? Yeah, okay. Yes. Fine.
Does he have l'chalchila over anything? Maybe not.
I don't know.
Just that if you have a bracha when you don't know what other bracha to make, this is what to say.
I don't. It's possible. I don't know. Okay, so now let's get to Rav Yaakov Bar Zavdi. Rav Yaakov Bar Zavdi, Wormuth, you can keep going.
I didn't read the second Gimel.
Oh, leave out Gimel for now. Okay. I mean, you know, it. I mean, it relates, but it's not. For the moment, we'll put it aside just as we're skipping that part of the Yerushalmi.
Are we going to come back to Gimel to relate it to the Yerushalmi?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Rabbi Yaakov Bar Zavdi.
Rabbi Yaakov Bar Zavdi, Bashemari Abba. Shemin Diet Omer Alav Brit Kriyat.
Okay, now this statement, by the way, is also found in the Bavli. Now, here's a case where you want to sort of ignore, you want to ignore the Pnei Moshe, or the Mari Apanim, the same person. The Bavli is going to introduce an ukimta. I don't know if anybody has seen the Bavli yet. The Bavli is concerned about the fact that nobody drinks olive oil. It's probably a great likelihood, although you do wonder in the Mishkan, excuse me, in the Mikdash, when they had leftovers of the oil, where am I, Kohanim? You were coming, right? Right. At least you were coming too? Oh, give me help. We could almost have a excuse me, full Berchas Kohanim now. At least we have some singing. But you could probably, two of you could provide the singing anyway. I don't know about Sion. But, so in the Bavli, so there might be some questions. What do you do with the leftover in the Menachos? How do they consume that exactly? Because they could wind up with theoretically copious amounts of olive oil. So I don't know what they did. You know, you may be right, but when there's certain—I don't remember where—certain mishnayos that make it sound like you know the shemen is nechal kohanim. It could be al yidei devaracher, but nobody raises. Certainly, the Bavli doesn't raise that issue in this discussion. The Yerushalmi does not at all comment about how you consume the olive oil. They accept at face value the statement that shemen zayis omer alav borei pri ha'etz. Now, it could be—it's conceivable, but I think you cannot assume. That the Yerushalmi would have agreed with this point in the Bavli. Because it doesn't literally, it says nothing about it. So according to the Yerushalmi, if you go home, you take a cup of olive oil, you want to drink it, you make a Borei Pri Ha'etz. Period. Okay. Again, I would highly recommend against doing it, but... So let me caution here of what you're doing. What you're doing is you're projecting a sort of late Babylonian approach back onto an earlier period. See, you what are you thinking of when you say that? You're thinking of bread, or chamesh esmini dagan, right? Which, in halacha, take on a much more powerful status. But when you read the Mishnah in the sixth parak, what does the Mishnah say about pas? Yes, it can serve as the tafel. The Bavli, I think Rav Ashi comes along and gives this very, very twisted ukimta, very complicated ukimta, you know, that it's a case in which you had eaten too much of the peiros ginosar, you know, you were almost punch drunk on these fruits, they were so sweet, you were sick from their sweetness, so you needed something salty to counteract that taste in your mouth. So instead you took maliach, you know, some type of heavily salted fish, but you couldn't eat the maliyah straight up because it's just too salty, so you had some bread with it. That's where bread is considered. It's in that case that bread is considered the tafel. Now, okay, but the Yerushalmi doesn't have that ukimta, and it certainly is an ukimta. So in terms of the Mishnah and the early Amoraim, I don't know if you can work with an assumption that they have yet sort of created this category of super ikars, if we can call it that, of things that no matter how they're found, they're still considered the ikar. Now, even the halacha lemaisa, it's not 100% true, meaning you have that case with bread. You also have the case with, we say, if something has chamesh esmine dagon in it, so then you make mizonos no matter what. That's not true. That's not the halacha. It has to be something, if it's there just as a... to serve as a glue in something, you don't make a mizonos on that. And this has to be really a part of the food that you want there, even if it's sort of comparatively speaking minor. So then you wind up with this, you know, this uber ikar of chamesh esmine dagan. But I don't know if you can assume that in the context of olive oil. Forget the fact that it's not nowhere, as far as I know, does anybody say that about olive oil explicitly. But on top of that, the Mishnah does not seem to be working with that assumption, and it doesn't exist until late in Bavel. So there's no reason to assume that the Yushalmi is working with that either. Okay. So anyway, he says, you make a Bari Pri Ha'etz. Pretty straightforward. Now what? Go ahead. And here I would actually differ a little bit with... It may be Tam Bareach, but I read the Yushalmi a little bit differently than the Pnei Moshe, just where whether there's a question exactly, but it comes out to the same place. How do you read the next part? Go ahead. Okay, and for those who are not familiar with Yushalmi, how did you read that word before Rav Zeira?
Kume.
No, you read it Kume, it sounds like, get up, Rav Zeira. It's Kome.
Right.
Yeah. It means before. That's like Kidom. Or Kamei in Bavli Aramaic. So, Rabbi Chiya Bar Papa, in the presence of Rabbi Zera, said, now why don't you read the next part? Umas Nisan. Okay, now how did the Pnei Moshe read it?
As a question.
He's going to read this as a question. In other words, you're reading it as a Messiah off at the start, I think the correct way to read it. The Pnei Moshe reads it initially as a question, and then they explain why it's not a question. But read it the way you're reading it. I think that's the right way. Yayin, lav. And yayin is already you've been shochet. You ground up the grapes, you press them, and you've extracted it. So the form has been changed, and yet it's only chutz min hayayin. Right? So lo amar elo chutz min hayayin. Ha shar kol advar. Shchukin hein. Now that's a very important line in the Yushalmi uses, and it's going to use this expression over and over and over. Be'enon hein, which means?
It's extant.
They are as they are. Okay, well put. Now, Be'en here, those of you who know a Be'en, and where do you know it from? Yes, but where?
The Bavli.
Okay. Yes. Okay, but in the context of food, where do you know it from? Yes, Michal, I'll say it again. I'm sorry?
You get it with Tumah V'Tahara, and you get it with Tumah. But you have Tumah V'En or Tumah...
What's the other side? Balua. Blios Kalim. We distinguish between Blios and things that are Be'en. So here, the Be'en, David is correct. The word Be'en means extent. I don't know what the acute folk etymology might be that you can see it. I suspect it's a folk etymology. You may have its precursors in biblical Hebrew. Yeah, Michael, you were going to suggest something?
Yeah, by Torah, though. They have a lot that
That's really...
It's color. No, it's color.
That's such a... You know, Rashi says like you, I think. I never read the Pasuk that way, though. I read the Pasuk as in the eyes of the Kohen. Is there a case... No, I'm trying to think. Is there one case that you can't... Is there one case that... Bnei Anega Amad Be'enov could be read in the Enov of the Kohen, or... No, you're right. You are right. Kivinei lo afacha nega es eino ha nega lo fasa. Right, it means its appearance. Gabe, it may be color,
like,
but he's correct, though.
Ein Habedolach.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of, Ein Oke, Ein Habedolach. But what you said, Michael, is correct. That I, after working through a couple of years ago, I figured out you're correct. The Ein of could be either way, but there's one on its own, and maybe you could still read it that way. In other words, you have what can throw you off here is L'chol Marei Ein HaKohen. Right, a Kohen is Summa Bachas, Ein of is no good, but but one of the cases certainly is the same usage. And Ben is correct, but Ein Oke, Ein
Habedolach. Oh, it's the same word.
Yeah, it means its appearance. So I suspect that it's not the same usage that Chazal used.
It's cuneiform, no? In the Nega stated its original form. This is also its original form.
No, I think it's clear there it means its appearances. But even so, it's still different than what it is here. Be'en is usually used to be extant. That's not, in other words, the word. Well, if you were to translate that in English, if there were a JPS, I bet you would say in its appearance. Is there a JPS?
Yeah, right behind you. On the shelf. Next one over.
That one?
Yeah, right. There's a ton of holy scriptures.
Blue.
It's at the end. The way end of Tazria. The way end of Tazria, it should be the end of chapter 13. Does somebody have the Hebrew? Because it only has English.
Well, what pasuk is it?
I think it's Pasuk Nun Hey in this. It says, I think it says the priest sees that the affection has not changed color. But we certainly don't pass that JPS, but they did a pretty good job nonetheless. But the point is that I think Eino means the appearance to the eye, but I think that this Be'en is probably an offshoot of that. So maybe it really is linked to what which appears to the eye. That's how extant is defined. So anyway, it's definitely, even if you wanted to read not as color, it still has a different, no pun intended, shade of meaning than the one that's used in Chazal. Chazal means extant. So Yushalmi says be'ein anhein. In other words, even though you pulverize the fruit and you've turned it into a liquid, it's still considered be'ein anhein. David,
is that a halachic reality, or does it mean, is this
what else?
Well, I mean
the juice is what it is, right?
But I mean, does it retain its bracha because it's be'en, or since it retains its bracha, we consider it be'en?
No, I think that the be'en is the horse, and the bracha is the wagon or the cart, whatever. Yeah.
But once I
answer, I'm sorry, David. Continue.
If that's the case, then that creates an arbitrary. I mean, for certain, why then is wine different? Why is it not considered extant?
It is. No one said that the wine's not extant, but wine, you didn't say, in other words, wine has a special bracha. Yushalmi doesn't talk about why, but it's not hard to imagine. I don't assume that it would fundamentally differ from the Bavli here. In other words, yayin is considered the meshubach of everything.
So, but it's saying here that the
yayin
lav
shachuku, that was... Well, the yayin lav shachuku. And you see that you, in principle, should have made a boy prayer eights, except for, I think Yushalmi Daf is assuming it's a special bracha for Yayin. But if not for the special bracha, it would have been boy prayer eights.
But it's clearly saying that the fact that it's squeezed doesn't change its nature.
Correct. Yeah. Ezra?
I don't know. What's going on with the shaka of Atari here? Who's saying what?
The way David read it, and I think the correct way, a little different than Pnei Moshe, is the following. Rav Chiya Bar Papa said in the presence of Rav Zeira that the Mishnah proves that you make a boy preitz on olive oil, even though it's not olives anymore. And what's the proof? The proof is the proof that we pointed out the first day in Shir, and we mentioned again at the beginning, that the Mishnah says that you make a boy preitz on all fruits of the tree except for wine. Well, of course you don't make a boy preitz on wine. It's not a fruit of the tree. It's a liquid. The answer is no, it is a fruit of the tree, despite the fact that it's a liquid. And the fact that the Mishnah singles out, that's obviously it's getting its own bracha. But if it weren't for the special bracha, Bari Priya Gofen, what would the bracha have been on wine? Bari Priya Eitz. And Shemen is no different than that. Okay, Ezra, is that clear?
Yeah.
And you're going to get the exact same thing in the next line, okay? Fine. Rabbi Abba Amar. David, go ahead.
Yeah.
Rabbi Abba Amar, Rav Ushmuel Tarvayu Amrin, Yerek Shaluk, Omer Alav Shakon Yabivaro.
Okay. So Yerek Shaluk. Now what is Shaluk? Overcooked. It has not dissolved yet. It is well overcooked. You know, imagine some really, really soggy carrots or broccoli. You know, I don't find that particularly appealing. What? Don't mention that word. I can't eat it when it's in its raw form or hard form. I don't notice it in the soup. So if you're ever coming to our house for Shabbos, just don't bring a head of celery. So anything that's really overcooked. Now, some things it works better for, some things not. And before we continue, Shalom, what was the results of your research? You couldn't find the book?
Yeah, I walked around the library for a while.
Did you look in the card catalog?
Yeah, I went to
U-List. And did you find it in the catalog? Okay. Does anybody know? I didn't look in Jastrow. What is a tormos?
Is it what?
Lupine. Okay, fine. Okay, I think so. Okay. A lupine, we're about to get this, so it's worth explaining. A lupine is a legume. It produces a fruit, or call it a fruit or a vegetable, whatever you want to call it, very much like a pea. It's a member of the pea family. However, it is about the only, they say, inedible. Now, what I found on one particular website was that it contains a very large dose of alkaloid chemicals, and it basically is poisonous to the digestive tract. It can make animals very sick when they eat it. It can make people very sick when they eat it. My guess, I'm going to assume this until further research, is the reason why your sholeik, the tormos, is because probably what it's doing is dissolving those compounds. And the fact that it's very bitter, this may not be truly systematically, but the little botanical knowledge I have, often foods that are poisonous also tend to be very bitter. And maybe sort of a built-in evolutionary characteristic to prevent. Wild almonds are poisonous. They contain very high levels of cyanide. Domesticated almonds are can be very sweet, actually, but the bitter taste is usually enough to drive anybody away. I've never smelled cyanide, but someone told me that if you smell cyanide and you smell rotting almonds, there's a similarity in the smell. So that's one example. They're very bitter. I suspect that's a common feature. So apparently this lupine is it's extremely toxic. Yes, so it means this overboiling probably dissolves those compounds, so then it becomes an edible legume. And until then, it's exceedingly bitter. Okay, it all does seem to fit together. Jason? I don't know. So they probably don't sell it in Glad Express, would be my guess. Lupine. No. That's fodder for lawsuits. So anyway.
Right.
Fine. So what happens next? So now, so far, Yerek Shaluk, I mentioned Tormus, not obviously you know why. Yerek Shaluk, they said you make a shackle. The next line in the Ushami says as follows. Yeah.
Is there
going to
be any other food that's
going to
not dissolve?
I don't know that the Tormusim dissolve. I mean, I think...
In fact, we know that they don't.
And the normal shaluk means overcooked.
I'm saying, is there anything besides for that pea that's
going to... I don't know that it dissolves, by the way, even after the 7 cookings. It's just
doesn't.
These compounds.
I'm saying it doesn't. And is there anything else that...
You could cook that long.
Yeah.
I don't know. Shlomo, you have a homework assignment tonight. Yeah. Make sure you do it before Michal gets home and you don't get in trouble or something. Can you handle boiling... tomorrow night, you know, take a few carrots and see if you boil and boil and boil and boil them. You'll report tomorrow what's happened, okay? But they will still be there unless you mush them, actually. They're very soft. But unless you actually take them and mush them. What?
That's just one time.
I mean, I mean, it's just from my own experience in the woods, we actually, if you boil it,
acorns are edible.
No, but you have to boil them. I mean, they're loaded with tannic acid. If you boil them multiple times and change the water, then you can make them edible.
There you go. So yeah. We have the sort of the coolant of a tormus. Okay, yeah. There you go. Have you often had to subsist upon acorn slime?
Not had to, but demonstration.
Okay. He didn't show them that after he took the bite, said yummy, turn around and spit it out, like, you know. But okay, fine. So they say, so he says, said the following. B'shem shul rashe lefasos sheshlakon. Okay. And by the way, this is, if I may tell you a point, I want you to, your job now to make guys crazy around here is to go and ask them what a tormus is. Okay? This is one of those areas, I mean, I think the, I'm not quite like Dr. Soloveitchik, but when he taught Kate Samavarachim a couple of decades ago, this Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik. So, you know, apparently, you know, you had to have your copy of what's his name's...
Horticultural Dictionary?
What's that?
Felix?
No, not Felix.
The German one?
The German one, right? Because Felix...
Oh, no,
and De Juden. I want to say it's Pruss or something like that was his name? Press?
Yeah,
No, Krauss is Leinwerther and in Talmud. I don't think so. So basically, I'm not going to make you come with a botanical dictionary, but you lose so much of the flavor of what's going on, pun intended. What's that? You know, I don't know what they have on the bottom. I would hope that they do, but you lose so much of it if you're so not aware of the metzias. You know, I was not aware of I learned about tormus. I could have told you, you roasted seven times, but it didn't have any meaning to me. It somehow just makes more sense when you sort of realize what physically is going on. I don't mean the chemical process, but you understand what you're dealing with. I mean, I haven't seen the peas, but you can see what the flower looks. A pretty flower, actually. And it grows in Eretz Yisrael. As well, which is kind of obvious, but nonetheless important to note. Okay, so if you find a vegetable that can't grow in Eretz Yisrael that's mentioned in the Gemara, what do you know? You have the wrong identification. Okay. I understand. If it's found in the Mishnah, okay, then it doesn't, and it can't grow in Eretz Yisrael, and we near Eretz Yisrael, and it sounds like it's growing, it means you have the wrong identification. Okay, fine. So what do you do on these Rashi the Fasos? So im be'einan hein. Okay, if they're be'ena, here it means be'en the way, in other words, they're intact, would be better than extant. So then you make a bar priadama, even though they're shaluk, right?
But what are Rashi the Fasos?
They're the peas, probably. What did I say? No, I'm sorry. Did I skip? No, we're going to get to that later. Okay. That's coming up later. I'm sorry, I jumped. Yes, it's turnip heads. Right now, we don't have that problem. So if it's still good, that actually makes things simple for the moment. So you have these turnip heads. So if they're still be'en, you make a bari pri adama. Now, does that fit with what came before?
No.
No. Then right? What the Yushalmi is not going to tell you is upligaleh. It's not going to tell you that, but it's obvious that there's a machlokas here. As to what Shmuel held. The first sheet that claimed that Shmuel and Rab both held that you make on Yerek Shalok Shakal Nebizvaro. Now, there was no explicit statement distinguishing between Imbe'en Anhein versus not, but I think you have to read that statement as no matter what, you make a Shakal. Here, there's a distinction. Now, in reference to this, what's the response? I'm Rabbi Yose.
I'm Rabbi Yose, Umanita Amra Kain. Right, so our mission says this. Put me in a patch,
Shachoku. Okay, and again, we've seen this before, I think, but the word mar there, aleph's disappear all the time in the Yushalmi, so when you see the word mar, assuming it's omar, unless you have reason to think otherwise.
Unless you're talking about...
What's that? It appears in the Bavli, the aleph disappears. Right, so all we're left with is the mem. Yes, Jeremy.
So the way that Yerushalmi is written in the Mishnah,
yeah,
is for both Kaf and the Ayin, that those are examples of, they're not limited examples, but they're talking about general things that are shachuk.
Well, no, pas is shachuk, by definition.
No, but it's saying pat and anything else like pat in a sense that it's shachuk.
No.
Yain, anything else.
Well, no, adarabah. The point is that Yain... yayin and anything else that's like yayin is considered priya ilan, perasa ilan,
no,
and you make board
the first person.
No, see, I don't. So I that's a rhetorical havamina. That's not a havamina. In other words, and isn't yayin shachok? And you see, it's still considered. But ha kol davar would not be, and so that's the proof. In other words, the point is, again, the way let me read it again. I'll take the first one. I'll read the pas. It's right here. Masni samokin chutz mina pasha la pasu amar tzelach min aret upas lav shachoku. Is it not ground up? And lo amar ela chutz mina pas. And it only said chutz mina pas. How kol shar kol dvarim afa pisha shkugun hein be'ein on hein, and you would make a bar pri adama on them.
That's not how I understood it.
You want to read? No, I said at the start. The Pnei Moshe reads. An interim question, but he gets to the same place. In other words, the kasha is, I'm not even sure how to read. Chutz min apash, l'apash l'amor tzelech anar, tzupas l'av shachaku. So you see that, I don't know what the havamina was according to the Pnei Moshe.
It's that pot isn't pot shachuk, and therefore, just like pot is shachuk,
And what, Jeremy?
And you make a separate bracha on it.
But how could that have been the hava meaning reading the Mishnah? Because the Mishnah never told us what the other bracha is. That's why the Pnei Moshe is so difficult. I mean, you've highlighted it well. In other words, the Mishnah is saying on everything except for A, because on A you make by Priya Goffin. So you're going to tell me, well, A meant with A also meant A. So, who's mentioned Shahakal until now?
No,
but the Mishnah hasn't mentioned that bracha yet.
I understand.
And nowhere in the Mishnah, what's the Hava mean that the Mishnah meant that? Or that the Yushalmi was reading the Mishnah that way.
Rabbi Yosei is saying that Rabbi Zura's statement is unnecessary because we already know from our Mishnah that anything that
No. He's not saying it's unnecessary. Which one, Rav Zeira? No, he's agreeing with Rav Zeira. He's saying Masnisa Misayeh Leploni. He simply brings a proof. He's not challenging him. He's not claiming it's extraneous. He's not claiming he's wrong.
But I don't see why you have to read it.
That's how Masnisa Amrakein is read in the Yushalmi. You will not find, I don't want to take a Shavu Darais on this, I don't think you will find Pshita in the Yushalmi on something that is an obvious derivative of the Mishnah. In other words, a restatement of the Mishnah, I don't know what the Yushalmi would do, but that doesn't happen often in the Bavli. But the Bavli would frequently ask Pshita when an Amoraic statement seems to be directly implied by the Mishnah, the clear implication. And they'll say, Pshita, and the Gemara will say, no, you know, you might have thought this other way. The Yushalmi, I don't think, asked that question. When you say, you're right, Masnisa Amar Kain, if this were the Bavli, could say, well, why did he need to tell us? But in the Yushalmi, Masnisa Amar Kain is simply Masnisa Misayel. I mean, you can think about that generally in learning the Bavli. Why is it sometimes that you say, Nema Misayel, you know, Nema Masnisa Misayel, and other times you say Pshita?
So it's for that reason that you need to reject the Moshe. Otherwise, I think it's really making no sense.
I don't even think he reads that way. I don't think he's reading Masnisa Amar Kain as Akasha.
He says Bitmiya.
No, Bitmiya, Hama Masnisa, and Lo Shamanu Lechale Kain. He's saying it's a question, not a question as Pshita, a question that you're wrong, that the Mishnah is a kasha against you. And then he comes on to see that the Gemara writes the ship and makes the proper diak. And my question is, what was the Havamina? You explain well, the Havamina for the Pnei Moshe is that everything that's like Yayin would not have been included in Boy Parades, but then the Mishnah hasn't told us, what do you make on the liquids that are not Yayin? There's a major lacuna here.
It would seem to me at least that Rabbi Yosei is being cholik on Rabbi Zeira in terms of the shachan. I mean, it says Rabbi Zeira said that shachan omer leah and shachal niyabin haro, whereas Rabbi Yosei is saying that everything that's shachuk.
I think the difference is that in one case that
which would make you say adama on them. So you would disagree with this idea of saying shachal
so?
Anything that's shachuk.
See, I'll tell you what, I'm biased and against that reading. He did. Pnei Moshe doesn't read that way either.
I'm sorry, he's a
terrible. Let me tell you why I don't like this reading. I don't like this reading because the first you shall me. I hear what you're saying. Is that maybe why the Pnei Moshe twists the first one? See, I'll tell you, you may be right. I read the Yerushalmi differently because my assumption of Shchakan means they dissolved. In other words, it's not like grinding up wheat into flour. If you take these turnips and you mash them, when they're already, you know, full of liquid, what you're going to wind up with is a thicker soup. Yeah, I'm not even sure it's going to be as thick as baby food. That's why I see how one could read the question that way.
Well, you don't need the words. Take those words out, and you're reading.
But it's in exactly analogous. See, I'll tell you what. Look at the first one also. V'yayin lav shachuku. It's the same language. I don't think
you don't need that one then either.
I don't think that that's a response. I don't think that that's a response against Rabbi Zira I don't think it's a response against Rabbi Zira B'Shem Shmuel. In other words, the point is pas, because the bread is still, the flour is still visible there, that's called Be'en. In the same way that they yell at the Lefrashe Lefasis, which are Shosh Shlukin, I still don't think that
so,
that's...
I'm sorry, so you read that line not rhetorical? Upatam Shlukihi is a statement or rhetorical? The way you read it.
It's rhetorical. Jeremy, I'm now concerned about a different question. Is the Yerushalmi really, when you read the Yerushalmi,
yeah.
You got asked appropriate to your name. Did you think this was a raya against or consistent with the idea that what Rabbi Zira said, Hashem Shmuel?
I think it was a raya against.
You think it's a raya against?
I mean, I was just going to say, I mean, it would be just to say that it is a riot against him, that would make it consistent with the previous Yerushalmi, where he's matching it up with Bari Priyalites. I mean, just like olive oil, which is Shahuk, right, gets a Bari Priyalites, so to here, that all juices, except for wine, get a Bari
Except
Bari Priyalites.
Here's the problem. Masnisa Amra Kain, in the first case, again, I'm putting aside the Pnei Moshe's reading, and the one it usually means, I think, maybe I'm wrong, it usually means in the Yerushalmi, Masnisa Amra Kain is a Messiah Ale. So then it's the wrong language here. The first one, Masnisa Amra Kain,
Chutz Mei Ayin. The first one makes sense, and the second one...
I understand.
Right.
So that's why, I didn't read the word. I hear now what the other approach, certainly. I just assume that if Shchakan...
Unless the entire thing is the Messiah, meaning...
Oh yeah, no. Let's go back to the first one. Go back to the Yayin for a second. It's the entire thing that's the Messiah.
I understand, but if you take away the Pnei Moshe's bitmira,
yeah.
Right? Amrakein, even though you would have thought chutz min hayayin shalayin hu omer barbi agaven v'yayin lav shachuku, right, and therefore anything that shachuk, like wine, would be an exception. Lomar ela chutz min hayayin.
No, and that's not the way I'm reading the first part of the Gemara. The whole point of the first part of the Gemara is that even though the yayin is not the same as the Mishnah says chutz min hayayin, and yayin is shachuk. So why did the Mishnah have to tell you? When you say that on Peiros Ha'ilan Omer Bori creates chutz min hayayin, what does that imply about yayin? That it's Peiros Ha'ilan. And that without this special takana, you would have made Bari Priyates. But isn't Yayin Shachuk? So why would you make Bari Priyates? So you see that things, even though they're Shachuk, you make Bari Priyates to them, except for Yayin, because it's got a special bracha. That's the simple way of reading the first Yerushalmi for sure. The second Yerushalmi, I'm not... Now I sort of see why it might be a kasha against what came before, but then the language, it's not parallel to the first Yerushalmi. And that may be what pushes the Pnei Moshe to do what he does, but I don't think that's what the first Yerushalmi is doing. Maybe it really is a rye against that. David?
I have two possibilities. Maybe the shachuk that Rabbi Shmuel is discussing is different than the shachuk that the end is.
Yes, that's what I think it is.
So what I mean, cooked and then ground.
And it's cooked and mashed up so that it's, you know, bears no relationship to the original. You can almost not see that it's there.
Two strikes against it.
Yes, as opposed to something which is no longer be'en because it's been overcooked. It's not the same vegetable anymore as the raw vegetable that you put in, which you might think is not bar pri adam anymore. So the use of the term shchukim is lav dafka.
It's the same process. It's just if done after being cooked.
In fact,
it out of the.
What's that?
I mean, if done to a raw vegetable, the vegetable maintains its name. If done to a cooked vegetable, then it removes it.
Well, I'm not even saying it's not. See, what the issue is not whether you grind up a raw vegetable. The issue is whether you sholik a raw vegetable. That's what I assume the raya was for. That even though you process it. No, shchukim is lav dafka ground up. It means that even though it's processed does not automatically disqualify it. I see. At the end of the day,
because
it's really
if you
difficult.
Overcook a vegetable, it still looks like the vegetable.
That's true.
But
the flour doesn't look like the vegetable, like the,
right,
like the wheat kernel, and still.
But the Gemara is saying that we consider it extant.
Right, but why not? But Yair would say, why not consider these ground up turnips also still extant, in the same way that when you grind up the, I could play the two strikes game.
You do consider the ground up turnips still extant. Only,
you make a shot call on them.
Sorry. You do. We'll process once.
So the appeal of this approach, as difficult as in certain ways, in the words, is it leaves the two halves of the Yerushalmi parallel.
And
yes.
The other possibility.
And it fits in the words. Masnisa Amrakein. But
yeah, the other possibility is that in Rabbi Zura B'Shem Shmuel, the Shachkan and Shlakan were.
I was just going to suggest that the problem is that the pas Hamotzi Lachem Eretz has to be Shachok. It's not Shalok, I think.
No, that.
But the second half is Shalok Avapisha Shlakan Heim Beinanein.
Yeah, exactly. And then the Reiriyosi Amadhin Amrakein is Misayayat.
Yeah, except for that, in the first statement of the Gemara, it's Shachok and Shchukin. And you're going to tell me here it's Shachok and Shlukin? That's strained the other way.
Wait, in
the last part, in other words, Hashar called Dvar Mafabisha Shchukin Hain, Beinan Hain.
What I would say, Rabbi Zeur B'Shem Shmuel, reads as follows. Rashi Lefatot She Shchakan Im Beinan Hain. Omer Aleihem Bari Pri Adama.
Shchakan.
Omer Aleihem Shekhani Abukharo. And then Amri Yossi is coming saying, Misayeya.
Wow, that's clever.
To the first statement of.
That's really clever.
Of B'Shem Shmuel, that Rashi Lefatot, of course we knew that. And then it's just talking about the Shchuka part, and the Shlakan part is just.
Woo! That's very clever. Hard to believe, but clever. That's very appealing. Did everybody hear what he said? Did anybody understand what he said? Yeah. Because I read the Yerushalmi one way, and then I realized there were problems with it. There are problems no matter how you read the Yerushalmi, but so let me try going over this. Let's go over the first part of the Yerushalmi again, okay? One of the Amoraim said, Rabbi Abbo says that you make a bari pri eitz on olive oil. Now, one of the other Amoraim said the Mishnah proves that point, the way we're reading it. Umasnisan Amrakein. How does the Mishnah prove that you make a bari pri eitz on olive oil? Simple, because the Mishnah says that on fruits of the tree you make bari pri eitz except for wine. That implies that even though wine has been pulverized, has been ground up, the grapes have been ground up, and it's no longer the grapes, it's actually the wine. You would have made what bracha if not for the special bracha of bar pri hagafen? You made a bar pri eitz, that's what the Mishnah implies. Okay. That's clear, right? Yes? Now, we had two statements regarding vegetables that are overcooked. One statement was that Rav and Shmuel held that you make a shakal on shaluk. Then you had a differing opinion that on shaluk, as long as they're be'en, at least the way it appears in our Yerushalmi, as long as they are be'en, you make a borei pri ha'adama on them. Shchakon, if you grind them up, you make a shakal. So that statement holds that if you grind up at least these cooked vegetables, that they're no longer considered extant for the purposes of the bracha, that you make a shahakal on them. Okay, is that clear as well? Yes, no, maybe?
Yes.
Now, the next part is the tricky part. The Gemara brings, Yushalmi brings a series of statements, of clauses, identical in effect, you know, just substituting different foods, as we saw in the first part, where they brought a raya for the grapes. Now, the problem is that the raya they're bringing is from bread. That bread, even though it's shachuk, what bracha would you have made on it if not for the fact that bread gets its own special bracha? What bracha would you have made on it? Bari Pri Adama. So therefore, anything that's shachuk, aside from bread, you're going to make a Bari Pri Adama on it. Now, and it sounds like it's a raya for what came before. Right? Is it a raya for what came before? So here is the problem. The problem is what came before suggested that shachan, you do make a shahakal. So how is this a raya for what came before? So one way of reading it is that it's not a raya, it's a kasha. The only problem is that doesn't fit in the words of the Yushalmi, Masnisa Amra came. And it's not just that the words of the Yushalmi, Masnisa Amra came, which usually means Lema Misayeah. On top of that, it's no longer parallel then to the first Masnisa Amra came in our sugya, where it was a raya. So the question is, how do you deal with this problem? So one possibility is to say, it's not parallel, too bad, and it's a kasha. What David is now, what I wanted to read was, and this was, David, this is also your suggestion, right? That the only time you don't, if you grind it up, the only time that you don't make an hadama on it is if you have sholek it first, so you've already taken it one step and removed it from the original vegetable, and now you puree it, in effect. So at this stage, you make a shahakal. But if it weren't for the shaluk part, if you only did shahakan, then Rav Zeira would have said that you do make a bar pri adama on it. And then the Mishnah is a perfect raya, because you grind up the bread, and you would have made a bar pri adama on it anyway, except for the special Takana, call whatever you want, that you make a borei borei hamotzi lachem and aretz. Okay.
So which way should we be reading it? Is it like
I'm not
the combination of shalot and shakan?
It's the combination that makes it shahakal. One or the other is not.
So you have cooking
that,
and grinding.
That's how we're supposed to read it? Or
that's,
is shakan by itself making it shahakal or no?
Well, the Yushalmi doesn't give that case of shakan alone. So it's a possibility that shakan alone would be hadama. It doesn't say that, right? But it gives you the case of shakan in be'enanheim versus shakan. It's an argument from silence. I don't know what would the din be if you didn't cook them, if you just ground them up. Now, the possibility that David is suggesting, which would eliminate the machlokes between two versions of Shmuel, is as follows. Rashi lefasos sheshchakan im be'enanhein omer labori pri adama. Shlakan omer aleihem shakon liyabidvara. It's very clever, but it actually doesn't work, because you don't have to say im be'enanhein. But
maybe that's explaining the...
That's not the way you would say it. You would have said be'enanhein. You wouldn't have put the im. So that was a very clever idea. It's not going to work. But that was David's suggestion. That if you simply reverse the two words, then what you wind up with is the Rav Zeira says in the name of Shmuel, if you grind up the vegetables, stol hadama. You overcook the vegetables, shahakal. It's consistent with Shmuel, and then the continuation of the Gemara flows naturally. Okay, so I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm going to put aside David's reading, but I don't know for sure which way to read the Yerushalmi. It may be that you have to read it the way Yair suggested and others have suggested, that there really is a raya against Rav Zeira, who said that shachan you make a shahakal on. When the Mishnah says shachan you make a bari pri adama on. If you want to avoid that contradiction and solve a different set of reading problems in the Yerushalmi, then you would just say that the implication of Rav Zeira is that only if you do two things to it, you process it twice to remove it from its original, then you would make a shakal on it. But if you only did one, he gave the example of shlakan, but if you had ground them up alone and not overcooked them, so then you would have still made Hadama. Then?
Bread, you do two processes on it. First you grind it, and then you cook it. Bake it.
Yeah, but you're not over baking it. There's a difference. Nobody says that yet. Nobody says, none of the Amoraim say that Yerek Mavushal, you don't make Hadama on. They say Yerek Shaluk. Now, interestingly enough, they don't say that despite the fact that the Mishnah Psachim puts them all together.
Right.
Despite the fact, you won't find any discussion on Mavushal.
Kavush later, and use that in the same way. They're not going to say that.
But Kavush is different, because Kavush really provides such a radically different time. Cook broccoli, not overcook broccoli, you know. Cook broccoli, raw broccoli. Have it. I mean, it's easy to eat the raw broccoli, but the cooked broccoli, well, that's who you are, I guess. But nonetheless, they taste like broccoli. Right? Pickle broccoli, and it's going to taste like salt water. You know, whatever the pickling, you know, vinegar and salt water, right? In the same way that a pickle doesn't taste like a cucumber. Okay. Fine. I'd hope we'd finish the Ushama. I guess that was wishful thinking, but that's okay. David?
Just to argue about the imbeinanim. Really?
Yeah, sure. I mean, listen, once you're mending the gear, so we could just take out the word im too, so.
but you could say it's im beinanhein as opposed to but im shlakan. You wouldn't say im, just im beinanhein, you say shlakan.
But you see, it doesn't.
Shlakan, so that it's not beinan anymore, then it's omer alayim shikon
yavaro. I'm sorry?
That's how I read that also, sort of a sequence of events.
No, I agree it's a sequence of events, but I think that what's going on, in other words, the way we're reading it, the standard way of reading it is just shlakon, you roasted it. Now, what happens after you, not roasted it, you overcooked them. What happens after you overcooked them? Are they be'en, or did you pulverize them? You know, they dissolve them. So that's what you get. Shlakon, im be'en an hein, omer lem bar pri adama. Shlakon, omer lem shakon lem b'varo. But the way David is reading is, Rashi lefaso shishchakan. There aren't two choices. It's not im be'enan heim, because that is be'enan heim by definition. That's what the whole claim is. That's why the im. It's not two. There are two roads. Either you grind them or you overcook them. That's why I don't like the presentation. Okay. All right. Wait. Whatever. The Yushalmi is difficult. As many Yushalmis are difficult, but at least.
Unless you would assume that based on the first. Took the paradigm from Rev. 8. He said, Shachan, without Shalom, assume the same thing by Rev. Adama. It doesn't need to be said. In the case, however, of Shalom, where it may or may not
maintain
the shape, unless you do the Shechita afterward, then you have a question. That's the explaining of it.
So that's, but that's going back to David's first suggestion. In other words, the double process, you know, when you ground up that which was already somewhat changed, then you already might be making a shahakal, right? That's not what he's suggesting now.
Right, but that would be sort of the subtext of the Yerushalmi here, where the Rabbi Zera and Rabbi Abba and Amram it's just not being in Shmuel. They're arguing over what Shmuel said, but then as far as the lechem goes. It's assumed if it's
shotgun,
then it's
going to
be hadama
acceptable. Again, that is sort of the second approach we laid out. Okay, last comment, David, and we'll stop.
If you talk about the first approach meaning two processes, then you still are required to explain the statement of Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Shmuel Tarvayhu. Then it says the Yerek Shishlokan.
It's a machlokas in what Shmuel held.
Or you could read it as. You have that statement, and then you have what Rabbi Zuhur is saying as relating to that. If you read it as Rashi Levitov Chesh Chakan, I mean, im be'inan, these are going to be extant as opposed to a Yerek Shalom.
But you wouldn't use the word im.
What?
You wouldn't use the word, you would say be'inan hein, umivarech aleihem, ve'omer aleihem, borei pri ha'adama. That's what you would have said, because that's the reason why you make a ha'adama, not a condition.
I mean, according to David's version of how it should be,
I like that, the version of how it should be. Yeah.
No. So then, why should there even be this the statement of Rabbi Zera? I mean, it seems to be that Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Zera are both saying the same thing about.
Well, because he's providing a second half that Shmuel didn't talk about. He didn't talk about Shakan. He didn't talk about Shakan.
He opens the gate to parallel.
Okay. Good.